Good afternoon. Welcome once again to Line 1, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. The practice of yoga is rapidly growing activity that's being used for mental and physical health. Today we're going to discuss what we know about this and try to get some perspective on what's real about yoga so you can join us. And joining us today from New York is the New York Times science journalist William Broad. Mr. Broad is the author of The Science of Yoga, The Risks and the Rewards. And in the studio here in Anchorage is a certified and registered yoga instructor at UAA, Margot Sorum. Margot has produced a CD on yoga for your back entitled Spinal Floss. You can reach us with your questions and comments in Anchorage. Our number is 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. Our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. Margot, thanks very much for taking the time.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And for suggesting the topic.
Oh, you bet.
William, thanks for taking the time also from back in New York.
My pleasure.
I'm going to start this, I guess, maybe a little bit out of whack, because I didn't suggest this as something we were going to talk about, but I noticed it earlier today. And at the beginning of your book, it says, you give a quote, it says, "There is no subject which is so much wrapped up in mystery and on which one can write whatever one likes without any risk of being proved wrong." What's that all about?
What's that all about? Yeah, good question. It's centuries, really, of a lot of aggressive marketing, which would have yoga do just about everything and anything that you can imagine. I mean, more so today, right, as you get one new style after another. People just make one outrageous claim after another, and oftentimes they're contradictory. So look around, you'll find that yoga will move you up, move you down, move you sideways, move you around, do this, do that, you know, just about anything under the sun. It's a free-for-all, and it has been for a long time.
And I guess up at the front, just to be clear to everybody, it's not that this program is here to knock yoga. You guys both do yoga.
Absolutely. I love yoga. I did it this morning, and God willing, I'll do it, tomorrow.
All right. So we're going to just try to take a realistic look of, as like the book states, is the risks and the rewards, and kind of get a good feeling about what it's all about. So what is yoga? If I use the term yoga, and you got to understand, I have trouble sitting, so I have no idea what yoga is. So help me understand it.
Well, yoga for me is the study of self. We're studying ourself, and we're using the yoga practices to help us heal and strengthen the physical body, to focus our minds, and to help us relax so we can enjoy our lives and live our highest values. So it's about improving quality of life.
That sounds right. I would buy all that. Plus, it's, you know, at a popular level, it's bending, stretching, deep breathing, all these kind of pretzel poses that people work themselves into, and some really smart, simple poses like the corpse pose, just lying on your back, but doing it very intelligently, learning how to relax your body bit by bit and dropping into a much lower state of body and mind for deep, deep, deep relaxation. There's all kinds of cool tricks in yoga. And they tend to all focus on your body.
So before we get into all of these tricks and helping me relax, what's the history? Where did this come from? Did it start with multiple different styles? How'd we get to where we are today?
Well, yoga's been around for over 2,000 years and been evolving ever since. Early writings like the Vedas, Upanishads, and then Patanjali's Yoga Sutras really focus on practices of the mind. And around the turn of the first century, or first millennium, Hatha Yoga emerged with focuses on both mind and health and purity of the body. So most modern yoga is considered Hatha Yoga, which combines body and mind awareness practices. And really in the last, let's say, 40 years, it's become very popular in America, and I would say that we're Americanizing it as much as we'd like to.
Mm-hmm. I would add one little twist, which I elaborate on quite a bit in the book, but there is this whole tantra sexual history to yoga, which emerges in the Indian Middle Ages, and in the and you see in the medieval times, and you see that coming forward as an important aspect of yoga. And then around 1920, the 1920s and 30s, all that got laundered out. The sexually arousing aspects of yoga and trying to use this as a way to get a sexual high became discredited. And the yoga pioneers in the 20s and 30s worked very hard to produce a laundered, sanitized, sort of British calisthenic type activity, which is really was the turning point for Hatha yoga that we have today. A lot of this comes from that period of creative ferment in the 20s and 30s, and produced many of the styles that still keep mushrooming today. But that was their main genesis.
So what I'm hearing is, like many things, including science, culture has its impact.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It happens. I mean, as Margo said, it's been evolving ever since. Every time, every place, yoga morphs into a slightly different creation.
And I'd even say that yoga is a living art. And so as more and more people do it, we keep adding to the vocabulary and learning more and more and more. So it's going to keep evolving and changing and be interesting.
So what I hope.
What we're doing in New York City and in Anchorage and across at least our country today is not what the historical yoga was. Is that what I'm hearing?
You're hearing right. I would say, especially in New York City, where you see some incredibly strange things and very aggressive styles. And ever heard of aerobic yoga? I mean, people are hanging from the ceiling on all kinds of wires and pulleys and things. And trust me, that's not what they were doing in medieval India.
Well, traditionally, I'll just add in, traditionally, in the earliest findings, we have 8 poses, all of which were seated meditation postures. We have a lot more going on today.
Yep. And
which raises the question is, what's hype and what's real? What's beneficial and what's salesmanship?
Well, that's was the whole gist of my book. I'm a science journalist, and I wanted to follow the science thread to try to find out what's real and what's not. And I feel like I succeeded pretty well. There's not that much science. I mean, there's like, you know, probably 1,000 papers, maybe 1,200 these days that describe various aspects of the discipline. But if you follow that thread, you learn that some things are very real and very good. Yoga is wonderful for basically all this good stuff in our life: health and healing, sex and longevity, moods and creativity. It's just a knockout on those kind of fronts. But as I detail in the book, there are areas where, like you started with the quote at the beginning of the book, you know, people will just say anything. They've been saying for a long time that yoga is basically a magic pill for losing weight, or that yoga is a magic pill for getting a great cardio workout. It's not on either one of those scores. There's no scientific evidence that backs that up, and there's a lot to suggest, you know, to the contrary. So science is a wonderful way to winnow and sift, and especially in a discipline like yoga where so many wild claims have been made for so long.
I really appreciated being able to read The Science of Yoga, and one of the things I actually told William before the show was that it was a great relief to hear that I didn't have to try to get cardio out of my yoga practice, because I tend to like to lounge around on the floor and get into deeper poses and stay for long periods of time,
right,
and just have that luxurious time exploring my body rather than having to try to make it do something at the same time, than just enjoy cardio outside in Alaska where it's pleasurable.
It gets sold as the only exercise you need, which really isn't true. I mean, the main thing that the medical community wants you to do is to have some kind of cardio workout on a regular basis, because heart disease is, that you know, is the number one killer, and people, you know, need to, you know, ream out those arteries and those veins to help, you know, unclog that whole beautiful cardiovascular system. So aerobics does wonderful stuff. yoga does lots of other wonderful stuff too, and it tends to be wonderfully complementary. But it, you know, it's you can, you know, it's mix and match. Do some strength and muscle development, do some cardio, do some yoga, and get, you know, just a whole hodgepodge of wonderful benefits.
It's clearly growing. I had some statistics. I can't remember where I said something. I do a promo about the program, and I may have done it there, but I couldn't lay my hands on it. But it's something, some amazing percentage in the last 10 years of growth in the number of people practicing. Who are doing it, and why are they doing it? What are they going into it with the right conception, perception of why they should be doing it?
It's about 20. I mean, there aren't really great surveys, but the rough estimate is that there's now about 20 million people doing it in the United States. And I think the usual breakdown is that it's usually, you know, 4 out of 5 practitioners are women, right? About 80% of the classes overall are women practitioners, and about 20% are men. So women are doing it preferentially, and they're better at it than men. They tend to be more flexible, you know, for some of those more extreme poses. And they do it. Well, Margo, why are your students attracted to it?
Well, I definitely think that, you know, what I hear when I first ask my students why they're here, a lot of them say stress reduction, for sure, is one of the number one reasons why they're there. Is to reduce stress. But the other part, I think, is to learn more about their bodies and how to use them properly. I mean, one of the things that I see as Americans is that we have terrible posture, and the fact that we need to put some attention on this because it's causing us a lot of pain. I think students come to yoga in pain, wanting to become more pain-free. So learning the skills to keep their bodies feeling good.
I find, I mean, for in my own practice, and you know, the science just screams this. If yoga does one thing, it does that number one thing that they're looking for, which is it, you know, can de-stress you. It can slow you down and help you not be overwhelmed. And that, you know, especially with all the crazy stimulation and uncertainties we have in this choppy 21st century. And the science is fascinating. It goes, which I describe a lot in the book. Yoga presses the what we call the parasympathetic nervous system, the rest and digest part of the autonomic nervous system. Instead of that, the sympathetic flight or fright part of the nervous system. So it really slows you down. It helps you relax, which is also why you get in trouble with that myth of instant weight loss. Because if everything's equal, if you keep eating the same number of calories but slow down, lower your metabolic rate, then you're going to start to gain weight, if anything. So the magic weight loss pill is a huge myth. But boy, yoga sure does work for stress reduction.
Well, and I think yoga makes you feel so good that you're more aware of your body, you're listening, and a lot of people do lose weight and they attribute it to yoga, but what it is they're making better choices for themselves. They're
Absolutely.
Listening much better to
Right.
their own internal rhythm.
Yeah, it's a lot of it is psychological. You bust the stress eating cycle. You're not using, you know, candy or sugar, you know, or just gorging yourself on chips or whatever it is as a way to counteract stress. You're on top of it, you know, through your yoga and through self-discipline. So it's a much better, healthier way to, you know, to deal with the daily grind.
Absolutely.
Let me just take a second to remind listeners again, you're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. My guest today is William Broad, a science writer who's written a book on what we know about yoga, the risks and benefits, and Margo Sorum, a registered and certified yoga instructor at UAA. Links to both the book and Margo's CD, as well as some other information, can be found on yoga, can be found at alaskapublic.org. If you've got any questions that might be addressed today, 550-8433 is our local number, and our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And once again, the email, line1@alaskapublic.org. I do have one email that's come in, and it was asked, would love to hear the guests to comment on yoga's relationship to back pain and to resiliency. The person says, I suffered a low back injury years ago. Since then, I've been practicing yoga, especially spinal flossing moves. I can truly say that I used to suffer from low back pain. My pain is now gone. I also am more resilient. If I slip and fall and experience a minor injury, I find that I recover much more rapidly. Comments?
Well, it sounds like perhaps they're familiar with my spinal floss sequence, which is fantastic. The idea that I teach at the university is that it's our job to spinal floss every day and take care of our backs. And it's not a mystery. Our spine moves in five directions. It moves forward, it moves backwards, it moves side to side, it can twist, and it extends. And so the idea is that every day we need to mindfully move our bodies in this way so that we fully floss the spine, move it in a healthy way. The way that the body, the spine and joints specifically, are nourished is through synovial fluid. So this idea that we're moving healthily so that everything gets nourished and can function at its best.
I am a veteran of an L4, L5 herniated disc, so I know lower back pain well. And my experience is that yoga can be wonderful, although there's one place in the book I talk about being in a yoga class and doing exactly the wrong thing, which was I was taken with all these lovely, young, flexible women around me who were doing these postures quite aggressively, and I tried to do the same and threw my back out. But it was a painful, humiliating experience. But in general, yoga is really great stuff. And it's in my own routine, revolves around exactly Margot's kind of prescription. I'm down there going from child's pose to, upward facing dog and going back and forth and stretching, through all that range of motion. And especially for the aging boomers, right? I mean, the gray tsunami and all these people who are getting stiff, and are losing their sense of balance. I mean, hello, yoga addresses those things, right? I mean, it's wonderful for loosening up. My mom, who is 89 and lives in Milwaukee, can get in and out of a car, unlike many of her friends, because she did yoga most of her life. I mean, she would, bend and stretch and did a headstand up until age 80. So it pays, and she hasn't done it for 9 years, but it's still continuing to pay benefits for her. So that, as Margot says, embracing, the potential and going with the flow and moving through a much more natural range of motion than we get from sitting in chairs and working at school and doing all this sit-down activity that's inhumane and ridiculous in terms of human evolution. I mean, you've got to get benefits from it.
The writer of that question also commented a lot about resiliency. So what I'm hearing is that you both would agree that just by doing this, you do protect your back, you keep yourself more flexible, you make injuries less likely, and recovery quicker. Yeah. Right.
But also there's a lot of the kind of core development that they talk about in Pilates a lot. I mean, also happens in yoga. Right, so you're building up, the muscles in the abdominal region and doing, important muscular toning for spinal support, which is also going to help. Right, it's not just flexibility; it's also lots of other stuff. But yoga tends to be a nice balanced way of addressing all those issues.
I recently had a student who was unfortunately standing at the bus stop, and two cars, to avoid each other, hit her, and they threw her very many meters, and she was fine. I think she got a few bruises, but she really feels as though the yoga helped her be resilient enough to be able to be fine in that situation. This idea that doing a little yoga every day is like putting money in the bank. It's an investment in your day-to-day health, but also in your future health.
Absolutely.
Here's another email that's kind of coming around some of the questions that I would like to ask myself, but it says, would you or could you please comment or compare and contrast and discuss the differences and similarities, overlaps, agreements, and conflicts between yoga and Tai Chi, perhaps any other related disciplines? My question would be, thinking of this more scientifically, is yoga been shown, has Tai Chi been shown to be better for stress than, let's say, walking, or let's say, jogging, or is Tai Chi better? What do we know about the relative benefits, or is yoga just something that gets us all doing something we ought to do instead of sitting around watching TV and eating?
Well, let me address the science, which is unfortunately is pretty sparse. There are very few comparative studies. Writing the book was hard because I had to, you know, noodle and find and dig a lot of times into the fabric of science to get the best information. And oftentimes it was focused just on particular asanas and looking at what they did. The next stage of that is starting to happen, and I'm happy to say it's gaining strength. The federal government, through the good offices of the National Institutes of Health, is starting to put some money, not much, maybe, you know, $7 million one year, maybe, you know, $8 million the next, into very high quality yoga studies that are looking more comparatively and are looking very carefully. The studies are usually done by elite schools to try to, you know, quantify the benefits and be able to make some of those generalizations. I'm sure, Margo, you could go rattle on at length about, you know, you can make all kinds of informal observations about how yoga contrasts and compares to Tai Chi and all these other things. I know my son is a Tai Chi fanatic and loves that stuff, and it's obvious in certain ways it's different, but boy, there's a heck of a lot of similarities too.
Well, I guess I would add to that rather than being different, or the contrast is that they can complement each other, that yoga's focus is on awareness of your body, awareness of the mind, awareness of your breath. And I hear back all the time from athletes that the awareness they gain through the yoga practices greatly enhances their running, their hockey, their volleyball, their basketball, their Tai Chi, that they're very complementary, and the awareness that you gain through these practices overlaps. You become a better runner when you do yoga.
Yeah, but the I think the tragedy, Margo, is that you are preaching an enlightened line, because much yoga out there is not very aware. I mean, there you can do yoga butt and all these ridiculous exercises, and the last thing that they're going to be working on you with is developing body awareness. I mean, it's a whole different can of worms. And the extremes. There's this wonderful book out called Hellbent by a guy
named
Ben.
Just read it. Oh, it was so good.
Well, isn't it so good?
It's so good.
You know, I've read hundreds and maybe thousands of yoga articles and books, not read them, but, you know, perused the literature for years now. And I've never come across anything so creatively and well written as Ben's book.
Loved it.
But you see this, like, extreme, you know, fanatic, cult-like, exhibitionism and maniacal, you know, kind of twisting and bending. And my God, these people are living science experiments. I mean, 20 and 30 and 40 years from now, who knows what nursing homes they're going to be in, or what the effects of all this is going to be. It's a living experiment. But there are, you know, sometimes some of that stuff goes to awareness, but a lot of times it just goes to this American competitive culture of trying to, you know, one-up the next guy and, you know, enter some extreme, you know, sports competition. I think it's unhealthy, and I applaud you for your emphasis on awareness. The psychological benefits are huge. You know, it not only makes you a better runner, I think it makes you a better person. You know, you turn inward, and it kind of becomes, as I was saying before we went on the air, I try to do a lot of my practice with my eyes closed, and it becomes a meditation. And there you just, I don't know, you come into a different, deeper resonance with yourself. I think it's a great way to move forward through life.
We're approaching halfway through right now, so I'm going to go ahead and take our break. I want to remind listeners once again, you're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection. Our local number is 550-8433. Our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. We're going to take a short break and rejoin my guests, New York Times science journalist William Broad and author of The Science of Yoga, The Risks and the Rewards, and in our studio, Anchorage yoga enthusiast Margot Sorum. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard.
You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Line 1, Your Health Connection, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcast of Line 1, Your Health Connection on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back. You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection on KSKA Anchorage, and I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. Today we're discussing the practice of yoga for health benefits with New York Times science journalist William Broad. He's the author of The Science of Yoga, The Risks and the Rewards, and in the studio is Anchorage certified yoga instructor practicing at UAA, Margot Sorum. You can mail your questions to line1 at alaskapublic.org, and our local number is 550-8433. Before I get back to the program, I do want to mention that there has been initiated in the last several months a kind of a grassroots science organization that's been meeting at the Taproot Bar and Grill each the second Sunday of each month at from 4 to 6 p.m. The Taproot Grill is on Spinard Road, and they have a speaker each of these Sunday afternoons and some discussion, and you get a good meal to boot. This coming Sunday, I will be talking about some of the new understanding of science, particularly the new cognitive information we're learning about science, which really goes to show that we really need to really be doing good science to understand how the world really works. So if you're interested, again, the Taproot Bar and Grill this coming Sunday from 4 to 6 p.m. Margot, if someone is interested in getting turned on from our discussion about yoga, what do they need to do? Who can do it? Who shouldn't do it? Where do they go? How do they get started? What should they avoid?
Well, it's a good question and lots of answers to give. But one is, I believe that most yoga classes are designed with healthy individuals in mind. So that being said, I think it probably is, I sympathize with healthcare providers because they probably would love to recommend yoga to their patients, but how do they do that safely? So the idea is originally, traditionally, yoga was taught one-on-one. You would go to your yoga guru and you'd tell them all your ailments and a sequence would be designed for you, specifically with your concerns. You'd be taught how to do the poses, how to do the breathing exercises and the meditation practices, and then told how often to do it. You're not going to get this kind of service from a group yoga class. So if someone has special healthcare needs, probably finding a private yoga instructor and interviewing them just in the way you would any other healthcare provider would be the smart thing to do. Otherwise, honestly, I'd start going to some yoga classes and checking out teachers that make you feel safe. Really, the way to practice yoga safely is to have lots of adaptations and choices that meet you where you're at. So if you're a beginner, you're going to start slow and you're going to gradually progress and learn perhaps more difficult poses over time. But you're going to want to be in a class where you feel like you're able to do things well and that feel good on your body. So I think it's being a smart consumer. I would say that individuals who are interested, start exploring, but be a smart consumer. And if you don't like one class, try again, try again, try again.
Can you do it individually?
Absolutely. There's a lot of talented yoga instructors in this town that have lots of diverse backgrounds and have their areas of expertise. So if you wanted to learn yoga with a private instructor, that is absolutely a possible thing.
The front of my book has a list called Styles of Yoga. that goes through a dozen of the most popular styles and just gives a one or two sentence sort of description of how they work and what they emphasize. That I wrote that with, you know, beginners in mind to try to help them pick through the jungle out there, because there are a lot of styles and a lot of differences from brand to brand. The other point that I would stress, which I think is can't be stressed enough, is that if you're looking to learn, try to get the most experienced teacher you can. These green teachers that come out of diploma mills are going to try to impose cookie cutter styles on you and, you know, bend you into a pretzel shape when you shouldn't ought to be going there. You should be paying attention to your own strengths and limitations. A teacher that has been around the bend, or like Margot says, you know, she teaches tries to give you, you know, the range, the depth of the experience. And I don't know, from the way she's talking, she sounds like the wisdom of the ages here. She's been around. She knows a lot of this stuff, and that's what you want in a teacher. You don't want a greenie, because too often they're sort of, you know, gung-ho enthusiasts who don't really know what they're doing. One of the best yoga experiences I had was with a guy in New York City. I start a chapter with this. His name was Glenn Black. The guy was such a hawk. I mean, half the class were teachers, and it was a brutally hard regimen. But he watched us so carefully, and the whole class was customized, and it was based on what we were doing and what he assessed our abilities and limitations as. And when he would see us approaching the precipice, you know, he'd pull us back, and he'd say, "Okay, lighten up, bend your elbows a little bit, don't press so hard." Right. So, and that takes experience. That takes an intelligent eye. That takes knowing the human body, and that's really what you want in a yoga teacher. If you can find that, you're sailing.
What about doing it on your own with a book, with a DVD, you know, online, something like that at home? Is that a wise thing?
I actually think it is. I mean, when you're doing it on your own, you're not pressured or having anybody look at you influence you. So you're feeling it from the inside. The reason why I did the downloads as audio files is because when you're just hearing a voice, you can close your eyes, you can intuitively do what comes to your body through those instructions. So absolutely, I think learning on your own at home is an amazing thing to do. Really, at the heart of the practice, I honestly tell my students, it's great to go to classes and to learn new poses, but then take them home and make them yours. See how they work on your body.
I totally agree. And I think, especially for guys, you know, there are competitive pressures in these classes. And this, if you want to talk about injuries, we can talk about it. But, guys are not as flexible as women in general. Yet they have much more muscle mass. So they can power themselves into poses they shouldn't ought to be doing. Well, you get yourself into a class with a lot of good-looking babes, and, you know, you kind of want to impress them a little bit. And the testosterone is, you know, flowing, and you're feeling pretty good, and next thing you know, you're in the emergency room, right? Because you've got a fracture or a dislocated joint or something, right?
Yep.
That's the competitive pressure. And there are some styles that are more competitive than others. A Bikram studio is covered with mirrors. So that, you know, you are comparing yourself with, you know, the people around you, and, you know, it makes it easier to kind of create this competitive atmosphere. So I don't know of any studies that have looked into this issue, but I would say, you know, that it's highly likely that most of the injuries and the really unsafe stuff happens in competitive environments rather than being home alone. That said, I will say that one of the letters that I got, and I talk about this in the afterword I've written to the paperback edition of the book, was with a guy who was doing yoga home on his own and got a stroke because of what he was doing. So it's not, worry-free, but what is, right? Every exercise, every human activity has some level of risk, and yoga does as well. The thing is to try to get smart about how you do it so that you, you know, lessen the risk and increase the benefits.
William mentioned something about strong bodies maybe overdoing, but I also want to mention that flexible bodies do not benefit necessarily as much from the yoga. You want to focus more on strength and stability in the postures rather than going into your flexibility, which is actually just hanging out in your ligaments. So a lot of times for my flexible students, I adapt the poses significantly for them so they have to bend their knees. They're not allowed to go as far over so they can actually address their tight muscles. And people with flexible bodies have tighter muscles a lot of the time, so they're more likely to injure. So we really have to approach it from each individual body, what is going to actually benefit them, and how are we going to apply the yoga to bring about the changes that we want.
James, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Yeah, well, this is a great topic. For me, yoga has kind of saved my life. I had a hunchback in high school, and I went to a private school that offered yoga. And it straightened me up. I gained about an inch of height just standing comfortably. But where I noticed it benefited me most, and I wanted to get you guys' input on this, is in martial arts, in MMA. These guys go in there and they beat each other up, and my muscles would be tense, and my neck would be tense. And just something as simple as cat pose and cow pose would open me up, and I'd go in the next day brighter than the other guys. And they go, what are you doing? Oh, I'm doing yoga. You know, and it totally benefits jiu-jitsu guys, and they're not doing it, you know. And I don't know why that is, but I just wanted to share that. If there's any martial artists out there, this is not a feminine exercise. It's not a masculine exercise. It's for everybody. And it benefited me in multiple places in my life.
Absolutely.
It's that resiliency that Margot talks about, right?
Right.
It's that it just builds. The more you do it, the more you get.
Well, and just like our listener just said, it's actually the simple things. You notice that your body's getting tight, it's getting tense, and the truth of the matter is we're all getting tight and tense because we're all fighting gravity. So what can we do to fight that? Get down on the floor and roll around and loosen up your muscles. Literally, that's my yoga practice most days. It's just getting down, laying on the floor, going through the spinal floss moves, and it makes everything better again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you. I love this topic, and I'm glad you guys are doing this. Thank you.
Thank you.
James, thanks for your call. Marilyn, you're on line one.
Oh, hi there. I just wanted you, if you could, to address the aid that yoga gives to your digestive system.
Uh-oh, I was told not to talk about this. No, I'm just kidding. I have this whole class that we do at the university about digestion, and it is all about the poop in some ways, and the fact that yoga can help us poop way better. So there's a lot of things that we can do, breathing practices and movement to help stimulate the way that our internal organs work and function better. So one of the ancient, I shouldn't say ancient, but doing this Uddiyana Bandha, this lifting in and up of the belly area and then fully relaxing it outwards, gives the internal organs a massage and helps them find their best placing also, because the organs get moved around to where they're not supposed to be or function at their best. So the idea that we're using the yoga poses and movements to move things back where they go so that things function properly and hopefully you get better movements.
Well, you not only that, but as we talk in the chapter of the book entitled Divine Sex, there's a lot of clinical evidence that you know, moving your abdomen and that internal massage and that kind of stuff that you're doing not only helps your digestion, but is also really good for your sex life. I mean, you know, it's which is a direct expression of, you know, your level of healthiness and your ease with your body. I mean, they can watch the hormones zipping up. They can see the brainwaves zipping up. It's good stuff. And a lot of it becomes because you're getting inner flexibility. Everybody knows that yoga is supposed to increase your external flexibility. What's not well known is that physiologically, at a very deep level, it stirs the pot. It gets, you know, it gets things moving and more flexible internally in a physiological way that, on balance, is wonderfully beneficial for all kinds of aspects of your you know, inner body, for digestion, for respiration, for you know, for your sex life. It's the evidence is very clear.
Let me remind listeners once again, this is Line 1, your health connection, and we're talking about yoga. If you've got questions, our local number is 550-8433. That's questions or comments. And you can also email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. We do have a toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. We do have a couple of calls and an email, but before we get there, I want to make sure we talk about some of the risks, William, particularly if you don't mind addressing this. And I'm going to start this by a quote that you put down that you said that suggesting harm from yoga brought you more, quote, coverage umbrage, yuppie outrage than the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq combined, suggesting that people don't buy that.
Yeah.
What's the facts?
Well, okay, well, here's the dealio, right? yoga has too often been sold as a magic pill. It is, you know, surrounded by this sort of mythical ethos. And that a lot of people don't like to hear that yoga, you know, is down to earth, that yoga has risks and benefits just like anything else. So, and especially when the book was excerpted in the New York Times Magazine under the fetching headline, How Yoga Can Wreck Your Body, which was not a headline I came up with and didn't know about it until it was ricocheting around the world on the Internet. A lot of people got very upset. But the facts are that yoga can be dangerous. Yoga, you know, isn't a magic carpet. It's like a car. It can take, or a snowmobile, it can take you to amazing places. It can transform your life and make it so much better. But if you don't know what you're doing, you can hurt yourself badly or kill yourself. And I mean literally kill yourself. The thing that I dwell on in my chapter on injuries is strokes. These, I don't want to, you know, press this pedal hard. I'm not, you know, saying people who do yoga always get strokes. This is a very, very rare phenomena. But because it's serious, I discuss it at some length. A stroke is a medical euphemism, as you know, for, you know, part of your brain going dead. It's a bad day at the yoga studio or anywhere else. And there are two particular poses that have been implicated in stroke, the shoulder stand and the plow position, both of which put a lot of stress on your neck and on your upper spine. And the medical reasoning behind this is that you can tear the delicate inner lining of a vertebrae that goes right to your rear brain. When that happens, you get clots, and the clots cut off the blood flow. So you don't want to do that. And there are smart ways to do shoulder stands. You use blankets, and you try to de-stress the neck. So it's not that the pose is always going to be bad, but there are probably ways to do it that are worse than others. So there are smart ways to get around some of these dangers, and that's why smart teachers and intelligent yoga are the way to go.
Roberta, you're on line one.
Hey, how are you doing this afternoon?
Good.
Good. I am a huge proponent of yoga for many reasons, but just wanted to comment on the discussion about whether it's okay to use books or DVDs at home, and this does kind of tie in also into the safety of yoga, that I think seeing an instructor in advance is so critical, because even just in minor ways, just the position of your hips, if you're in a warrior pose, just having an instructor there who can show you the proper alignment,
the right
so
way. Yep.
You don't think you're doing the pose correctly for a long time and then find out that you could actually be getting so much more benefit from it.
I agree. I think that having a home practice and checking with the teacher is the best possible combination, that you're really able to play with the poses and figure out and have awareness in your own body, but then also checking in with an instructor and being able to go deeper into your postures for even more benefit.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks.
Thank you. Yep. William?
Well, I was just going to say, I think that, you know, you can, you know, it's like anything. There's a range of ways to do this. And you can, I think you can start safely, you know, with a DVD, but the sooner you get to an experienced teacher, the better. It's only going to help you grow and have a more intelligent practice. But, you know, it makes, I mean, doing this on even a book, You know, it can get you started. And like Margot said, a lot of this, you know, boils down to, and a lot of the really good stuff is rolling around on the floor and getting comfortable with your body. This position called the child's pose is just so simple. But, you know, you get into it and you sink into it and you get deeper and deeper and you come into a whole new kind of relation with your body. Or the corpse pose, laying on your back, learning how to progressively relax your muscles and sink into these deeper states. That doesn't take a lot of expertise. You can do this at home on your own and start to feel the benefits and get the gist of it and, you know, open up this door into this whole new world and a whole new experience with your body. But, yeah, it, you know, the more experienced teachers you can get, the better, and that's really long-term the way to go.
I had an email that came in, who was a person who's very happy with her first class but wanted to know some more home DVDs and books that you might recommend. And I want to point out that both the book, Williams, and Margot's CDs are linked on alaskapublic.org. But
There's two texts at the university that I recommend that my students use, and they're both by Gary Krafsow. He wrote Yoga for Wellness and Yoga for Transformation. And what I love about Gary's work is that there's a ton of different sequences in this Yoga for Wellness that apply to certain ailments. So how to deal with insomnia, how to deal with low back pain, upper back pain, how to deal with these different scenarios. And he comes up with amazing sequences to help us hone in on some of these areas. His Yoga for Transformation goes through the five yoga koshas and this idea that we are a physical body, we are also an organic body, we're a mental body, we have a personality, and that needs to be addressed, and also this bliss body, like how do we do practices that make us feel connected. So I would highly recommend those as home practice books, but there's many, many, many good books out there also. I'll think of some more.
Yeah, I don't have any. I mean, I'm a science journalist. I don't really know the field of all the books, but I have a reading list that at the end of my book that goes through some smart, you know, other literature on understanding yoga and what it really is at a deeper scientific level. So. That's all there at the end of the book.
Oh, and one of the books on there is one that I learned from you, William, and it's Lauren Fishman. I've gotten all three of his books. He has Yoga for Back Pain, Yoga for Arthritis, and Osteoporosis, and they are wonderful.
He's great.
He's amazing.
He's a good friend. He's a physician in New York City. The guy is like an elf. He's 72 years old, and he acts like a 45-year-old, you know, and he's running around doing all this stuff. You know, like so many people who practice yoga for a long time, he's just got this, you know, he's youthful in his body, in his mind, in his spirit. And he's really fun to be around. He's fun to be with at a party.
That's awesome. And, you know, people like that do make you believe in the yoga. It's like, you know, you see the people that have practiced and you're like, I want to be like that when I'm that age.
Right, right.
It's exactly. Very motivating to do the yoga.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sue, you're on line one.
Okay. Hi, this is Sue.
Yep. What can we do for you?
Well, I use a cane and I have a bad left hip. Is there anything you guys can do for me?
Okay. So you have what's wrong with your hip?
It doesn't support my weight very well. I have an artificial right knee, which makes it difficult for me to get up and down off the floor.
Okay. All right. So you use a
cane.
Anything
I can do?
Oh, absolutely. Even people who are bedbound can receive immense benefits from yoga. So absolutely. So in bed, I would say you do this in-bed yoga practice where you're going to do knees into your chest, you know, on your back, and then you're going to put one foot back onto your bed, and then you're going to extend that leg out long. You're going to be able to do gentle twists from side to side. There's breathing practices that you can do and meditation awareness practices also that actually do amazing things for pain. So probably if you have specific health concerns, you know, finding a private instructor that you'd like to work with is maybe the route to go, so they can design a nice simple sequence for you to connect with.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. You know anybody who can do this?
You know, honestly, the owners of the yoga studios in town, Karen Greenwood, is also a physical therapist in addition to being a trained and certified yoga teacher. I see private clients. My yoga teacher in town, her name is Rashmika. Yoga with Rashmika, and she does a style of yoga called Svarupa Yoga. It happens to be one of my favorite styles of yoga. It's extraordinarily restorative. You do a lot of poses just laying on your back with props that help support you at these angles that, one, will release your tailbone, and then release your sacrum, and then release your lumbar spine and low back, and then move up the thoracic spine into your in your neck to the crown of your head. It's a lovely system of yoga, and I'd highly recommend classes
What's
with
the name
Rashmika.
Of it again? I didn't catch it.
It's called Svadupa Yoga. It's Svaroopa. Svadupa.
Oh, okay.
And again, Rashmika teaches classes. So she's in the phone book as Yoga with Rashmika.
Okay. Super. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Thank you. Bill, were you trying to say something there?
No, I mean, that all sounds good. All I know is sort of, I know this from an academic way with the Lauren Fishman books. There's a lot of good literature out there, it looks good, on, you know, yoga for healing, and the kind of recommendations that Margot's giving sound just right. They're, you know, you really, in that case, that woman definitely should go and do a class, but there's also a big literature that can get you cooking and thinking about specific things to do for specific pains.
One other thing I guess I should mention is there's a pose that all of us would benefit greatly from, and it's called Shavasana. It's relaxation pose. And all of us would greatly benefit from doing this. And William mentioned at the beginning of the show that it's just laying down flat on your back. And it actually suggests that people with back pain elevate their legs, that they put them over a couch so that you put your body at a 90-degree angle as you do this. It actually will release your low back better than laying flat, where the low back muscles do naturally contract slightly. So the Yoga for Shavasana MP3 files that I have online are actually a really lovely introduction to how to go into this deep state called yoga nidra, or conscious sleep. And this really heals everyone at a very deep level.
Bill, I had a question just before I came on the program, but some people here at the studio, they ask about Bikram hot yoga, if I'm saying that mm-hmm. right. It's very popular mm-hmm. here, being a northern climate. What do you know about that?
What's the buzz? I learned a lot from reading Ben Lohr's book, about which is Bikram, and he goes and studies with him and tells you more than you ever wanted to know about this. The thing that I'll say two things. Every person who I've met who does Bikram looks fantastic, right? They glow. So that said, physicians worry about this stuff because the heat loosens you up a lot, and you can, you know, loosen those joints and ligaments to the point that you get a destabilized joint. And this hasn't been studied a lot, but, you know, you can, if to the extent that that happens, you may be more prone to hurting yourself. So I would call it a medium to advanced yoga. You know, you don't want to start there. But once you've been moving on, and if you move carefully and thoughtfully, it might be really good for you. But it's also filled, you know, I mean, as the Ben Lohr book shows, there are a lot of zealots out there in Bikram land who are, you know, just doing this stuff for what I consider kind of, you know, extreme sports thrills rather than that inner glow that that yoga is supposed to give you.
Does yoga generally improve flexibility? We've kind of talked around about it. I want to ask specifically, and strength.
Yes.
Yes, there are studies that are there. Those kind of easy, those are easy answerable questions from a scientific point of view, and there's no question. Strength and flexibility, yes, mm-hmm. and balance.
Right. I was going to get, that was my next question, because especially in the elderly, it's a huge reason for falls,
huge.
Which get people into the hospital, and anything
huge.
We can do to help falls.
Absolutely. It's a no-brainer. Many of these postures are helping you develop that, you know, is it the cerebellum or, you know, whatever all the, you know, the neuromachinery is that helps you find motor movement and balance
That's
all that stuff.
The cerebellum.
Yeah, so, I mean, it works those things quite well, and it's a learned response. You can learn to balance better. It's not, you know, something you either have or don't have. Practice makes perfect, or certainly practice can improve it. Am I overstating this, Margot?
No, I think that's great. And the only other thing that I would say is that we all have a potential range of motion in our bodies, meaning that when you do the yoga, yoga will address the tension. What yoga can't address is the shape of your bones and how your femur bone fits into your hip socket. So there is going to be, over time, something called compression, where you're now moving bone against bone. And that's something you do not want to be doing in your yoga classes. You want to be addressing the tension, not the lack of bone range of motion. So that's something that we cultivate awareness about.
We're into our last couple of minutes, and I do have some emails and a phone call, but I want to use this time to sum up what each of you have to say here. I like to end the program with putting things back in perspective. Bill, you've talked about danger, and you're exactly right. I mean, there's always some risks and benefits to anything, but I want to put it all in perspective and kind of so that our listeners come away with the right information the last thing they hear. Bill, let's start with you.
All right. This, I wish I had written this sentence when I did the book, because it says it more concisely than I do anywhere else. And this is the heart of my book. A century and a half of science shows that the rewards are many and commonplace, while the serious dangers tend to be few and comparatively rare. And the evidence also suggests that smart practice can reduce the risks. So overall, on balance, yoga is a wonderful thing. And if you do it intelligently, baby, you're going to have a great time.
Okay. The science supports that yoga makes us feel good. And when we feel good, we can be active and do good in the world around us. So we become better citizens of the world. Yoga can improve our quality of life on all levels. So if you wish to improve your quality of life, the invitation is to do yoga.
All right. Thanks very much to both of you for taking the time.
Thank you, Thad. It's been great.
All right.
Thank you.
Keep up the good work.
All right. Have a great day.
All right. Thanks again. So my formal thanks to New York Times science journalist William Broad and the author of The Science of Yoga, Risks and Rewards, and Anchorage certified yoga instructor at UAA, Margot Sorum. A link to Mr. Broad's book and Margot's CD, Spinal Floss, are on our website, alaskapublic.org. You can actually go to that website as well and continue today's conversation on Facebook. That's alaskapublic.org. Next week, we're going to address a little bit different issue, and I want to point out that despite a vaccine that most children and many adults have had, we are experiencing a national epidemic of whooping cough. There's been over 40,000 cases and 18 deaths reported in just the last year. Next week, we're going to learn the reasons for this apparent paradox with our guests, the state epidemiologist of Alaska, Dr. Joel McLaughlin, and Dr. Brian Yablon. Pat Yak is vice president of public media. Kristen Spack and Dave Waldron helped us today by audio engineering. Kristen is our web editor as well. Thanks for listening. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
Line One, Your Health Connection is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.